Hey nerds, welcome to Games, Booze, and the Art of Organic Podcasting. I'm Josh Koopman. With me as always is Ty Tepfer. Thanks for listening to us on the BOD Network. For more, check us out at basementofdeath.com or follow us on Twitter at basementofdeath. And if you like what you hear, rate us on iTunes or Stitcher. This is episode 22. This week we have the Bodfather, Troy Weiss, with us in the brewhouse. John is serving a one-game suspension for cheating at X-Wing. Coming up in the show, we talk about games we've been playing recently, including our X-Wing game night at the Basement of Death. We give our latest Kickstarter update from the group, and Ty explains why we should all be playing Age of Sigmar. We hope you enjoy it. Calling all sponsors, if you'd like to sponsor the show, email us info@basementofdeath.com. Our theme music is by Fadeback. For upcoming shows or to check out some of their songs, visit fadeback.org. Hit it, boys. Hey guys, welcome to the podcast. Yeah.
We have, so good to be back, Josh.
Yeah, we have Tyson Tepfer here, Troy Weiss, the Bodfather himself, and myself, Josh Koopman. What are we drinking, gentlemen?
What are we drinking?
Troy, what do you got?
Right now, I'm drinking Growing Power, a farmhouse-style organic pale ale from Lakefront Brewery. And if you're not from Milwaukee, you know what Growing Power is. It's urban farm, run by, do you remember who the guy is? He's an ex-basketball player, and I used to know his name. But basically, he's done an urban farm where they grow food for lower income and to make fresh food available to people that are on, you know, food stamps and other stuff like that. So
they get a bunch of different locations too. A lot of local businesses like partner up with them and do little events and stuff to try to help them out. And it's a lot of volunteerism. Yep. There's not very many people like on staff. So yep. It's pretty cool. It's a cool thing.
And if you go, you have to really work. It's a real farm.
Right. Yeah.
That's what people who go there, they kind of like, oh, we're doing one of these fun corporate volunteer things. No, you get your hands dirty. You're working on their farm. Yeah, so it's pretty cool.
I did that recently with Second Harvest, and they have a farm. They operate from Milwaukee County, similar idea. And you're cleaning like harvest baskets, and then out in the orchard you're working.
Mm-hmm. So Lakefront partnered with Growing Power, and
and they made the beer from organic barley and organic hops, and it's pretty good. It's good. Sweet. Stuff, like everything from Lakefront. And then previously to that, when we were, I don't know what we were doing before this podcast,
playing epic,
yeah,
we were preparation, triple P's.
I grabbed from Door County Brewing Company, close to my heart, and where I grew up, Cerulean Stout. It's kind of vanilla milk stout. So it was now that we're out of summer, I haven't had a very a dark beer in a while. So it was chewy, a lot of smokiness, a lot of good flavor, a lot of vanilla. It was good. It was a nice change for as the weather starts to get a little colder here.
Awesome. Yeah, I had a earlier when we were playing Epic. I had a Lagunitas little something something. It was delicious, and that sparked my interest into drinking a Lagunitas IPA. So I'm sticking it to the California brews today.
You're sticking it where?
In California.
Oh, wait. No. So Lagunitas, does it taste fresher than it used to? Like Lagunitas of a year ago.
Sure. I mean,
they operate a huge bottling brewing setup in Chicago now.
Oh, cool.
That opened up within the last year, because before that they had to ship it from the West Coast via truck, and some people complained that their Lagunitas was not as fresh as due to the distribution times.
But that now makes that makes a lot of sense. There's an American Homebrewing Association. I'm a member. They have a thing in Chicago with Lagunitas, yes. And I was like, well, aren't they a California brew? Yeah, there's a thing going on, I think, next weekend, actually, in Chicago, and that makes sense then. Yep. Cool. Ty, what are you drinking?
I'm drinking a potion of haste.
Nice.
I need two actions per turn.
Yeah. He needs to keep up with Troy and I.
Yeah.
Running circles around him. So, what have we been doing lately, gentlemen? I know, Tyson, you've been busy keeping us running this this awesome dungeon in this little game called Dungeons and Dragons that we're playing with our friends Matthew and Elena and your brother Tommy and Troy and I.
Five players, one GM. A lot of content. We're trying to get in. We get those 2.5 hour sessions. Trying to get a couple encounters in each one. And right now, you guys are in the depths of a prison for demons. It's a pretty friendly place to be. A lot of cool stuff and happy faces down there for you to interact with.
A lot of fire and brimstone and.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, a fair amount. Some glyphs, some hidden large skeletons, just the usual dungeon fare. So yeah, running that for you guys, and then running another one for Matt and Elena and Tom, and then playing in one with Matt. So three D&D campaigns right now.
Wow,
and those are all whatever you want to call it. Remote, distributed, whatever you want to call it, right?
Online tabletop, Roll20.
Yep. Roll20.
Yeah, Roll20 is great. I'm really enjoying it. Like, all the rules are, you know, there. They're all built in. Yeah. Like, the character sheets are there. You can just click and roll dice. It's so simple. And there's a lot to it. Like, it's simple to use, but there's enough there that it's, you know, very comprehensive.
They just had another release of updates where they've added playlists for their jukebox feature, which you can tag to a specific page. So when you're the GM, you guys see one large map, but I have several pages across the top that I can just drag and drop the players onto to change locations. You can set a fixed playlist of background sound, music, different effects to each specific page. Now they added that, so they're constantly evolving, constantly doing more with the tool. And then D&D is only, you know, one platform. They support Burning Wheel, the old school Dungeon Crawl classics, just tons of different systems and pages with character sheets, because a lot of it's user developed content. They've provided the vehicle, and everyone else can provide the macros and the different stuff. So.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, I just saw they're doing Burning Wheel right as their kind of online game that they're showing up.
Yep.
Which is cool. I'd have to drag it out. I own a copy of Burning Wheel, probably from 10 years ago or whenever that came out, right? And but I've never played it, just read the book, kind of see what it was.
Man, it sounds like we need to get a hold of Roll20 and I think we should sponsor us.
We should link to in our show notes to Roll20, and then we'll just harass them via Twitter. Send out some tweets at the different guys, because I follow some of them individually now. So I'll be like, hey, check out this gaming podcast that talked about you guys. Don't listen and be like, that son of a bitch, he's one of the podcasters.
But it was funny. We were talking on when we were playing last, that if we would even actually get together and do live, we probably would still have Roll20 up in the room, either on TV, on our iPads or something, just because, I don't know if I love the character sheet. Like, I don't know if I'd want a paper sheet anymore.
Right.
So it's funny. I started playing in another role-playing game campaign just today. That's an in-person session with the guy running it. I met through Milwaukee Company of Gamers, the game night at the distillery, and he's running a World of Darkness Mage, the Ascension game. And I think I'm going to use my Roll20 character sheet. Since I'm a pro member now, I can take character sheets outside of games and just reference. So I'm going to create it in Roll20 and then export it for my own use at the tabletop on my iPad.
Nice. That's pretty cool. Sweet.
I am also a pro member of Roll20.
I really like Roll20 a lot. So this game comes up pretty much every episode since we bought it. Splendor. Like, I feel like we play it all the time, and it's so good. I was actually just telling a coworker about it, and he's like, "Oh, I haven't played it yet. Is it good?" And I'm like, "Dude, you just buy it. Like, just you don't even have to play it. Just buy it, play it. You'll love it."
Yeah, a lot of plays since Gen Con. Tom introduced it to his girlfriend, and she introduced it to her family. She has her brother and sister are 10, 11, 12-year-old, that range, and then she has brothers that are close to her age in their 20s, and they play it as a family game now. Like, it's just so accessible, and it's cool to kind of see it spread, because I remember Matt and Barry had told me about... I played it with Matt in April, then I bought it at Gen Con, and... You've since bought it. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Troy, I have not bought it. It's on my list, but I'm really close because, it's one of those ones you can break out in any kind of environment. The gamers will jump on it, right? Because you can get intense, but it is a gateway game that you can get kind of any way to play.
Yeah, it's not like super nerdy.
It's not. But the component level's really nice. Cards are all really nice. The chips, right? That's, I think, what helps get people really excited about it, too.
Exactly. So Forbidden Stars.
So we got that on the table.
Yeah.
Have you played that with?
I don't think I did.
I don't think you did.
No, it was me, you, and John that broke it out, and that was one of the games that, in the first time in a long time, that we played it for whatever 3 hours or more as we played it. We got done. And I immediately, the next day, was like, I got to play this again. We haven't yet, but I still go back to it because it's just what we got a good taste for was there's this really cool strategy. It looks really cool on the table. And you left me like, oh, I could have tried this and I should have tried this. And just the amount of different ways you can go at it and replayability there is going to be really fun.
A theme in a world that we love, being set in the 40K universe that we're all... big fans of the fiction, the races, the lore, setting it in that universe, and then it's in essence it's a 4X game. Mm-hmm. Don't ask me what the 4X is. Our exploration, something expansion, but you're forced into that interaction with the other players. It's not that style of game where you can sit back, castle up, build up. You have to go out and get. Your objectives, I think. What are they? Just objectives?
Just objectives.
Placed in other sectors, so you have to travel from your home base out onto the board to score your victory points and win the game. Combat's pretty straightforward. You have a dice pool and some card interaction.
Yeah, but that's. I mean, there's a lot of those cards that you can buy in and add into your combat deck, right? That's really where there's a lot of nuance.
So much
there.
Variety,
right? You can say, well, how am I going to go? Yeah, there's some certain things you're going to decide. I want to buy these cards to add to my combat deck to go after certain kinds of strategies to do stuff. So,
four great basic races too. Yeah. Instant. You have your Ultramarines. You have your Chaos Space Marines. Is it the World Eaters? If I remember right, the Iandan Craft World Eldar. And then the orcs, the Evil Sons orcs. So four iconic races, too, that play off each other real well because they're all slightly different. They have a slightly different feel to how you play them.
Cool.
Yeah, definitely thumbs up on that thing.
Fantasy Flight hit it out of the park with that.
One game we played a few weeks ago, what was it, six of us? It was Troy and John. It was me and Ty. Tommy showed up, and Marlon was here. Mm-hmm. And we played Colt Express. That was a lot of fun. Like, you know, when we started setting it up, I was looking at it, and I'm kind of going, all right. I mean, I'll give it a try. I'll play anything once. Okay. And, I had a lot of fun with it. It was the game style is really cool. You know, it's so there's the the engine, and then there's the caboose. Is there a caboose?
And they're cardboard train that you assemble and put together. So on your table, you've got this train and little meeples to represent your characters.
Right, and there's the main level, and then there's you can be on top of the train. So, like, yeah, I guess there isn't a caboose. There's just, there's six cars?
It's an engine plus car per player.
So okay,
you can play with two to six.
Sure, yeah, we had six, so yeah, there were six.
You have six train cars in the engine.
And there's, like, you know, treasure within the cars and stuff, and there's different, you know, you can move up, move down, you know, move forward, move back. Different cards that you can play, and your deck kind of gets altered throughout the game, and I don't know. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, and I had heard reviews of it, and I think you gotta be careful. Don't undersell the train itself. I mean, it's a three dimensional. So if you haven't figured this out, it's basically a three dimensional train that you build out of this cardboard things, and your people they actually move through the cars. And I think that helps a lot. I mean, the gameplay, and then on top of that, the gameplay itself just creates a lot of really funny and fun scenarios, or if you're sometimes very, I want to say frustrating, because even if you're getting your ass kicked, it's usually kind of funny. Yep. Like, oh, and it's really, I don't know what the name of the mechanic would be, right? It's kind of programmed
actions.
Yeah, pre-programmed actions. So you're playing my cards that say I want to go into this car, move down one, I want to pick up some treasure, or I want to shoot somebody and I want to punch them. And you're trying to kind of guess based on where people are going to be, how it's going to get there. And of course, like any plan, once it has contact with the enemy, it all goes to hell, right? So it's kind of fun. Then
people can manipulate your movement, pick up the treasure that you're going to grab, and you have no idea the sequence that other people are doing before or after you. You're just thinking, okay, I think Josh has got close to me. Maybe he's going to come into this car and punch me. But if I go to the roof and go over and then down, I can't get treasure this turn. So you're doing all of this analysis. But it's quick.
Yeah.
You would think a game like that, you would take a long time. What am I going to do? But it's very quick because of how the cards are played and then resolved.
Yeah. Right. You could be in a car with two other people, and on either side of you, there's two other people, and you'd throw a punch action, and then, you know, by the time that card comes up, there's nobody in the car with you, and you're punching the air, you know? So you never know what's going to happen. No. I don't know. I thought it was a blast.
Yeah, it was a blast. And I think that's what the best thing to say about this game is that, not that it doesn't matter if you won or not, but I think the experience of going through it was just as fun. It didn't really matter who ended up winning in the end. Mm-hmm. It's just the fun.
I don't
fun
remember who won.
Yeah, I really don't either.
Right. So I think that's what really tells that says this is really fun.
I think that's telling. The three of us didn't win.
Yeah. I had no chance. Everybody ganged up on me. They thought I was powerful.
I think after that that game that night, we played Get Bit by Mayday Games. Yep. That series of games, they're all really fun. They're real kind of just quick, you know. This one, the Get Bit, is people have probably seen it on tabletop, but you know, the little guy's swimming and they're all in a line, and the guy at the end of the line at the end of the turn loses a limb. So you have, you know, four limbs and then you're done. So
I think that night was interesting because usually we don't have six people together.
Right.
We don't have a big game group. So it was finding games that worked for that large of a group, which Colt Express, Get Bit, there are those games that you need them to be somewhat quick. Yeah. If you sit down and you're trying to play Twilight Imperium with six players, you're looking at
you're in for a long
seven
night.
Hours. 7 hours, yeah.
So you guys played Xenoshift the other day.
Yeah, Troy and I got together.
It was a couple of weeks
ago. We recorded a noise from the basement.
That's right, yep.
Laid down a track, you know. Is that what they say?
That's the technical term. Okay.
Laid down some tracks. and we played Xenoshift. Troy, you kickstarted that, right?
Yes, I did. Yeah, I did. And that was a Cool Mini or Not, one of their first games that was not a mini game, right? And basically, I went totally on a Tom Vassell recommendation. He had seen a preview version of it, and he's like, "Oh, this is one of the best games I've ever seen." And I looked at it, and I really liked it from the concept. I mean, it's kind of like the Aliens thing. I mean, you're a space marines of some type. Your base is getting attacked by these aliens, and you're basically defending it.
It was strange how it plays like a tower defense game would play on, you know, on the iPad or on the computer, where you line up your guys in these lanes and the monsters hit those lanes, and once they overwhelm that lane and that guy's dead, they go to the next one and the next one, and then eventually if all your guys are done, they hit the base. So it had that feel of there's a condition for us to lose, and it can happen very quickly. Okay. So you're trying to prepare.
Right. And it's a deck builder mechanic to help. The preparing this is a deck builder mechanic. So you're buying out of a pool to build up your guys and to seed the lane that the aliens are going to attack in.
We didn't get much of a chance to help each other, right. But there is a mechanic where you could say, I had a great hand. I could put a guy in the Troy's lane to help him defend.
Okay.
We were constantly being overrun and overwhelmed, so we didn't get much of a chance.
Yeah, but it was a good feel for what could happen, especially if you have like a 4-player game. You hope that maybe one guy actually comes out easy and can help other people. Yeah. So it has some, it's pretty good. I mean, and again, there's some expansions I think that are just coming out that were also in the Kickstarter that I didn't get, but they're just starting to hit retail. And Xenoshift's also, they also have an iPad version. If you just want to get a taste for, and it plays almost again exactly like the board game. I don't know if it's the best translation. It's a really good translation. It's the controls. Some people complained about the controls on the iPad. It's a little fiddly to try and look at what the cards are, and sometimes you do things, you do actions when you don't think you're doing actions. So that it's not the best. Thing in the world translation, but it's fun, and that's I use that to actually learn the rules, because again the iPad knows the rules, so you can
you can't cheat the iPad,
right? Yep. So you kind of, oh, that's how you should play it, and it makes sense if you had rules questions, and then we played with Ty, so that was fun.
Very cool. So one other wish we had some product placement type things. So Troy, you just got a fat mat, right?
Yes, I just Frontline Games, along with Table War, they did a pre-release, because I had kickstarted their initial fat mats way back, I don't know, a year or so ago, which are the giant, they go 4x6, but they do all the way down to 3x3 of the different, and it's really that mouse pad material, which is super, you know, super cool, so it always lays flat, roll it up. I have a couple other, you know, mats like that over the years that we've kind of had, and this is like the latest and greatest generation of that stuff. And then the guys at Frontline, I don't know who the graphic artist is, but the graphics on these things are amazing. I have originally I got the Urban City one, which has some roads and blocks and stuff like that, and just putting it on your 40K table just ups things a whole, you know, you can just throw a few pieces of terrain on it, and it's like,
you've got these roads that form the city block. So when we did one of our team games where Tom and Troy against me, we did a cityscape, and your Land Raider is coming around this corner out through, you know, around the corner we're building, and the mat sets up perfectly to just put terrain on top of.
That's awesome. Yeah, so it's basically like an underlayment for all your terrain and your gaming that really kind of just makes everything pop.
Yeah, it's amazing, so the difference. Felt. Yeah, now you throw it on like a plain felt or something, and you're like, oh, that just doesn't have the same pop that. But they just did another, I think, 5 different designs that they put out, and they gave the people at Kickstarter, they kind of gave us a little, like a week or two lead time. They're like, hey, we got these new things coming out. So I jumped on and pre-ordered the one. One of them is a spaceship interior. Nice. And so that one, like, ooh, that looks pretty cool. Because I think that we could use for like a Zone Mortalis. Thing.
I think I tweeted at you. Something about, does this mean we're going to play Zone Mortalis?
Yeah, because I'm actually like, that's going to be really cool. And I got it as more of an experiment too. Like, could you do a Space Hulk? Could we use it? You know, we're always thinking about what's their next level of
improvement. What I think would be interesting with that too is, rather than the black felt, that could be just the underlevels as you put your Hulk terrain on top of it. That would look pretty
cool. Yeah, I know. That's what I'm like, so Frontline, if you're listening, I probably need about 2 more of those.
Yeah, Reese, we'll hit you up.
Yep, I'm looking to see if they want to sponsor.
Yeah, if you want to sponsor a pretty up and coming podcast, just let us know.
Or my Space Hulk game at Adepticon.
It's info at basementofdeath.com. Yeah, so I guess that leads into our 40K topic, gentlemen. I haven't dove into the plastic crack realm, or back into the plastic crack realm yet.
Tau is back.
Tau went when, back yeah, when's with the, a brand new edition.
When did they?
They hit. They're out.
Oh, it's out.
Here. Hi.
Hi. Hi,
new,
Tau.
New suits, rules in the last white dwarf. New Titan model.
What is Forge, what is that one?
I don't remember. Storm Rage, is that or
the
something?
Storm Rage? Yeah, I can't remember. And then there's the ghost guy. Right? I don't know. Ridiculous. I haven't paid attention. But
they're totally ridiculous.
It looks but, sexy.
Yeah. So I think you need one of those and you can join in with all the... Because now it's the big 40K battles.
You gotta have a big Titan.
You gotta.
Well, you don't have to, but lately that's what's showing up.
Tommy's Titan Wraith Knight.
Tommy's Wraith Knight keeps showing up on the board.
Knight. Yeah, Tom's getting a second Wraith Knight. He showed me this list that is... the other day, he's like, you want to play 40K? I said, no, I don't. I don't want to play 40K. My army's not good enough. He goes, you haven't lost me yet. I said, yeah, I've lost you. Victory points aren't the only sign of winning and losing some of these battles. But we've had a couple of team games that have been a lot of fun. Just Sunday afternoon. So, Josh, we need to get you back to rolling those little D6s.
Word.
Across the table.
Word.
Yeah, and it's been fun. Yeah, we've been kind of like once a month or so, we've just been carving out saying, hey, we're going to do a Sunday afternoon battles, and we did 2-on-2 and then a 2-on-1 battles. That was pretty good. And Eldar versus Marine Necrons, right?
Necrons Eldar versus Grey Knights Blood Angels.
Oh, that was the last was one.
The one where I had the Grey Knight Blood Angel.
That was a crazy Death Star. Crazy Death Star.
With Drago Stern and Blood Angel Assault Terminators with a Sanguinary Priest. So you're getting Sanctuary Psychic Ability, which is a 2-up invulnerable. It improves your invulnerable save. So with Storm Shields, they're 3-up invulns, and Sanctuary, you're at a 2-up invulnerable save.
You pretty much...
And then your Sanguinary Priest is...
They did lose.
They lost.
Yeah.
They lost the war.
They lost the war.
They won their battles.
They won their battles, yes. But listen, you always got to play the scenario. And
I didn't.
Yeah.
I just went for the kills.
And luckily, there was only one Death Star. And so that one Death Star can only score so much. So,
yeah.
Tommy and I actually, had that one well in control. It ended up, we seized initiative. Otherwise, it would have been a much more uphill battle. But
I deployed totally up front of my deployment zone. Yeah. I was ishing the go. Give me stuff to kill. And then Troy goes, I mean, we at least got to try it, right? We're going to take him. Rolls a 6. And boom. Like,
yeah, and then we had a trick where we were able to scout race. And then because we seized, I was basically able to do a turn 1 assault and take out.
Knocked out one of my tanks. Locked me down. Yeah. Changed how I could move. It was just bad news.
That's what had him on the defensive right away. Yeah,
and I mean, it's still an attack-based army.
Yeah, but you took out the Wraith Knight. The Wraith Knight actually died, but at that point we had things in control, so we were taking a little more chances than we should have. But that was fun. And then the one we did before, John was there too, and I feel like I brought Necrons to that one too. We did Necron Marines. It was you and I.
Mechanicus and Necrons versus Eldar.
Yeah, which almost made sense.
I'm seeing much Eldar though. I hate the Eldar.
And we beat them too, though.
Mm-hmm. We did.
I'm undefeated in these games.
Well, the older, wiser brothers versus the younger, more
adventurous.
Yeah.
So Troy and Ty, you guys belong to this group called the Milwaukee Company of Gamers. They have a little board games and beverages event. Once a month.
Usually maybe a little bit more than that. I don't know what their thing is. And they kind of took the summer off. I don't think they did.
Yeah.
The ones down in downtown Milwaukee.
Yeah, they do a few every, like there's open gaming every night with Milcog at Monday nights at the Franklin store, Tuesday nights at the Menominee Falls or Brookfield store. So Milwaukee Company Gamers has worked to get different events going on. But the one we make it out to, because it's downtown, is that board games and beverages at Great Lakes Distillery. We had about 23 people at the last one, so several different games get broken out. Camel Up was being played at one table, which looks fun. Codenames, which is supposedly a great game, is being played at another table. The Polish version of Mysterium, because nobody can get their hands on the English version of Mysterium, was being played. And then we, we were waiting for everything to kick off, because we went and grabbed dinner and went over and played a quick game, Epic, which has been a lot of fun by White Wizard Games, the guys who did Star Realms, their foray in the fantasy.
Yeah.
That game's kind of cool in its own right, just how it drives the action. You don't have to build up. You start able to bring out heavy hitters right away, and it's very push and pull. You see momentum swing a lot. Yeah. I don't know how your guys' game was, but...
Yeah, so there's a lot of, like, mechanics you're familiar with. When you play a game like that, like, you know, a card-based attack and defense... spells, you know, that in this game it's called events, but you know, with you know, a draw, an attack, a spells kind of scenario, you know, there's a lot of familiar mechanics that they put in it, which I think is great. Yeah. You know, like there's not a huge learning curve because you're familiar with it, but yeah, one of the things that they do really well that I thought was great with the game is you have. Like one action point, I guess I'll say, to play a card. There's some cards that are zero action points. You can just play those. But yeah, you're not like waiting for mana. You're not wasting resources. You're not doing those kinds of things. Resource management is kind of, you know, it's either you play the one or you don't, or you play your zero cards or you don't. Like. There's not a whole lot of like, oh, I need to wait for this mana to come up, or I need to wait for, or I need to discard these cards to play this one, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
That kind of goes out the window. And that's what makes the game really appealing.
It makes you focus on that tactic of when to play this card, what sequence to play in, when do I attack versus bring something else out, where games like Magic have that. But there's, you know, with Magic, my complaint has always been you get that initial hand. And you're screwed on mana.
Right.
You can mulligan, screwed on mana again. You can end up in a situation which just leaves you with that, well, I'm out of it.
Right.
I can't chain my next three turns and win this game.
Right. And you get behind a turn on, you know, on the mana curve, and your game's kind of shot. So, yeah, this kind of takes that away, which I think is great. Yeah. That Epic is a really fun game. I like it. I've only played once, and I definitely think it's a great game.
And we've been playing just pure random decks. Like, I think, you know, like this, there's a whole nother level that if you really are going to do drafting or constructed decks, I don't even know what that would be, right?
Yeah.
Because it's like, it seems they've done a really good job, just because we just keep doing the random. Here's 30 cards, pull them out. Mm-hmm. And it seems like every card, you know, very rarely do people have a hand like, oh, I can't do anything, right? There's never I can't do anything. Maybe I don't have a 12-12 monster that the other guy has, but at least I have something I can do to counter and things like that to get there. So, yeah, it's kind of, yeah, there's a lot of stuff there, but they really streamline other things to keep it going fast. So.
Yeah, it's definitely fun. Definitely fun game.
And then similar to Epic in that it's a card game, that night we also played... somebody had asked if anyone owned Ashes, because as of the time of this recording, Ashes is now available at game stores and online. I think you can buy it.
Yeah, I think it just came out this week, right?
At that point, because this was, what, 2 weeks ago? It wasn't.
A week from yesterday, yeah, so whenever we get this out, about 2 weeks right. ago.
And Ashes wasn't available on the streets yet.
Right.
It was only if you got it at Gen Con, which I did. So somebody on the, you know, the message had said, hey, does anyone have Ashes? And Troy responded for me and said, Ty's got it, I'll have him bring it. So I bought it. And it turned out that it was one guy who had asked the organizer if anyone had it. And that guy, Paul, who played a three-player game of Ashes. And Paul is the guy that's GMing that World of Darkness mage game that I...
See, it all comes together, listener. You know,
yeah, if you own games and you bring them, you'll meet cool people
that you can play more games with.
Yeah, the self-fulfilling prophecy of Whedon is what I think we'd call that, right? Play more games. I don't know, just using big words. And played Ashes, which worked great three-player. Especially with somebody we didn't know, so Troy and I were not going to be total dicks at the table and just bury him or, you know, snipe at each other. It was everybody was kind of feeling each other out and ended up creating a pretty close game that came down to the wire. I mean, Troy and Paul, you each had, like, a life left. And
yeah, it literally came down to one. Who was going to get the one card? If I would have had... It was my worst die roll of the night. If I would have had anything die roll, I would have won because I had an instant. I basically had an instant kill in my hand, but I couldn't play it. So I had to work to create enough, whatever, energy or die pieces so that I could play it. And Paul got to it to his be able to do one to me before I could do one to him. And that was that.
And I think what's great about Ashes too, similar idea. You have this dice pool that you're renewing every turn that you can use to activate some of your abilities. Then you get phases where you get a main action or a side action, and you can manipulate through discarding cards, increase your power level. You're not dependent on drawing random cards to play as resources. Mm-hmm. You have a set resource pool, and it just allows you to focus more on the tactics of the game versus the construction to make sure, you know, my ratios are right and my curve is right. Which I like, because I've always been bad at math, and it takes that math out as to setting up your game.
Mm-hmm.
Already working on expansions for that. I saw.
Yeah, it would make sense that you can add. And I think, you know, it's funny. I think that game probably really shines at two-player, but I've never played it at two-player yet.
Yeah. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it is a good game.
And because initially we played that four-player just to get a feel. And I didn't actually at that point. I was like, "Oh boy, okay. I'm not gonna. I don't know if I want to touch this." It felt even when we did that. I'm like, "Okay, I can see where this probably works as a two player."
Yeah, learning with four players made it very clunky because we were also all learning it.
Yeah.
Now I think having played it a few times, being a little more familiar with the rules, it would work smoother.
Mm-hmm.
In that setting, that number of players. Heads up, it's fantastic though.
And the other cool thing is, so like Epic, there's also like the, I think there's like a drafting mode and there's a constructed mode too. So
you can have the constructed, which the rule book gives you six pre-constructed decks and they seem to work very well, but they all have a set thing they're very good at doing. And I could see it when you're constructing, if you were to bring in other things, you could change that and manipulate the game in multiple ways, which would be pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
Or do a draft where you're, you know, building up your power.
Yeah, it's cool. It's a fun game.
Yeah.
So we had we went to the BOD, the original room,
the house that Troy built.
The house that Troy built.
The basement of death.
We had a little X-Wing night 2 weeks ago.
Last week.
Oh my gosh. How many people showed up?
We had nine. We had nine people. That was
pretty awesome.
Yep.
There was quite the group there, and yeah, we all brought our little X-Wing miniatures. Some are not so little X-Wing miniatures. There was like a
I think we need to let the listener understand how much X-Wing product.
Oh my gosh.
Because some of us have acquisition disorders where we just buy and buy and buy. And then you have Mike and Marlon, who I think have bought everything there is to buy for X-Wing.
Right.
It was the full set. Troy's bought a lot of the stuff, but they, I think, had every single thing. Yep. And Mike's friend, Randy came on. Dirty Randy
was there.
He was so confused when he asked if you could call him Dirty Randy. He missed the reference.
Yeah, so it's from the league. If you've watched the league, yeah, Dirty Randy. Anyway,
but he had a lot of stuff too. So we're talking thousands of dollars. X-Wing product was in Troy's basement.
Yeah.
Thankfully, nobody came to like do an X-Wing heist because that would have sucked.
Yeah, we had little 2-on-2 or 1-on-1 tournaments on the one side, and then the other side was kind of a set scenario, and it was a lot of fun.
Guys pulled out that. Yeah, we had one table, but we had two dogfights going on where we just kind of played a couple of games of that, which was fun. And then the other table, you guys had.
We did some of the epic ships.
Yeah, capital ships. The
Imperial Raider.
Yeah.
Break out the Imperial Raider, at least.
And the asteroids won.
The asteroids for sure won.
Although there's some questionable rules on that, I think. I think
the second was game, John screwed it up.
Oh, yeah, John. That's right. John
said that John ships could be trapped and stuck in space, not moving.
If you ran two ships into each other, neither one could pass through the other, and they would just sit there. Well, in the actual rule, you can actually, so if that happens, they do get stuck for a turn.
That turn.
But you can move through each other the next turn.
As long as your movement takes
you past, ship past. Right. Yeah. But
you're fine.
That never got conveyed. So essentially, there was two groupings of ships that were just like sitting.
They were dancing. It was like a middle school dance.
Yeah.
They're like barely touching.
Yeah. Now
they can't see this, but you know where.
Where you're holding? Like, yeah. Holding, at full that, arm that length gap away
between you.
Yep. And they like don't touch me there.
Yeah. It's not like bumping and grinding.
Right. At the waist, kind of holding straight up. Yeah. So the ships were just doing that the whole time.
Wow, it was really fun to watch. It was really fun to watch.
That was quite the
good thing was there was a UFC fight. So when that game was going on and John was breaking the rules, I could watch the UFC.
And so that's why John's not part of this podcast tonight, because we're
he's being blacklisted.
Yeah, he's got a one game suspension.
And one podcast
for not knowing the rules.
Not knowing the rules. Yep. Thanks, John. X-Wing Force Awakens.
Yeah. So I think whenever Force Friday was. Mm-hmm. Sometime in September, John did that day, went out and bought the new starter set for X-Wing, the base core set, and we played that right out of the box, me and Ashton and John.
It's got the black TIE fighters.
And the black TIE fighters and the new X-Wing.
Looks pretty cool.
They're pretty cool. Plus there are new rules, new damage deck.
Black TIE fighters, Josh.
They're black TIE fighters.
All right. Comment set basementdeath.com.
I know you're trying to make an African American reference here. It's they're the color black. They're black TIE fighters.
What?
Oh my gosh. Anyway, yeah. So they're really cool looking.
They're really cool, but they're new rules. That's the thing too. It's not just the new paint job. There are new rules. Those are they're more maneuverable. They have an extra maneuver. They cost more points. There is a new damage deck in there. So they, I don't know, Fantasy Flight basically made it so.
And the ships can't get stuck.
And these don't get stuck for some reason. Yeah. So Fantasy Flight's going to sell a crap load of those, of the core set. Because even all the people who own the core set are going to go buy the new core set.
So. No. Mm-hmm. Nope. Not all the people.
I don't know. They might at some point.
I'm done with X-Wing.
Kickstarter, gentlemen, our lovely vice, I guess I'll say. So Epic was a little Kickstarter that just you guys got your
it shipped a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
So the games we've gotten in have been after receiving our backer copies.
That was that's a good game. It's strong.
I'm on a Kickstarter streak. I haven't backed a crappy product. I don't know. Have you backed any crappy products, Troy?
Not in a while. Yeah, I'm trying to think of anything. One miss was I did get in on some of the Coolmini or not did base inserts. Back, I don't know, probably we're almost a year ago now or something like that. But that what happened is I got a bunch of stuff and that was it wasn't their fault. But then what happened is now GW has kind of changed all their base sizes, so I have a bunch of stuff that I may or may not kind of use. I didn't get that much stuff, but that was
they were
that
the kind old 28s of, instead of the 32s.
Right. So now I got, because thinking ahead, I was like, oh yeah, I'll get this stuff and I'll use it for my Marines and stuff like that. And now I'm like, well, now if I'm going to do it, I'm not going to base a lot of stuff on it, because even Necrons and things you can kind of. You put your miniatures on 32s rather than the 28 millimeter stuff like that or whatever. So that's the only one I'm like, who knows? But again, I still have a lot of troops that I'd probably put on, 28 millimeter stuff. So or whatever those 25 millimeter bases. So that one's a little, I call it a little bit of a miss, but that's not entirely a Kickstarter's fault.
One thing that's not a miss, Tiny Epic Galaxies.
I know, but I haven't played it yet. I almost played it.
Maybe post-podcast we'll have to deal it out quick.
Yeah. I mean, if it's anything like Tiny Epic Kingdoms.
Or Defenders.
Yeah, I mean, it looks so. I did break it out to kind of. Because you can even do a solo mode. So as I did break it all out and I sleeved all the cards and I read the rules and had all the stuff laying out. So I didn't quite play a solo one, but I got pretty close and I was excited. It looks like
it's solo.
It looks like it's nice. Got some good. It'll have some legs to it.
Han Solo.
He shot first. Tiny Epic Hero Call. What is that?
So Heroes Call is the expansion for Tiny Epic Kingdoms.
Okay.
I think where it's basically they add like a hero mechanic where you have some kind of a hero card that goes with your Tiny Epic Kingdom and gives you some powers and abilities and stuff like that. So that looked interesting and kind of fun. What really got me too, though, is in that too, they also have a bunch of play mats for each of the Tiny Epic games. So I think I ended up getting at least, I can't remember which ones I actually got. I think I might have got the one for Defenders for sure, because that just screams to have a play mat.
Mm-hmm.
And then I don't know if I actually got the one for Epic Kingdoms, because that one doesn't scream for a net playmat to me. So I think I might have got the one for Galaxies and Defenders for sure. But that was part of that Kickstarter.
Is that over?
Yes.
Okay.
I missed that one entirely.
Yeah, I did too.
I got that too caught up in Blood Rage and Black Plague.
Blood Rage, oh baby.
The Viking ship is somewhere between China and California right now.
It's on the slow Viking ship.
I do have this vision of the Vikings.
The guys rowing Dragon Boat, one of the longboats. Yeah, they've been rowing it across the Pacific Ocean since June. They hit that floating trash island that's somewhere in the Pacific.
Yeah,
mired.
The plastic.
Yeah. I want to see this thing. I've heard about this, the garbage pile in the Pacific, but I've never seen it.
You want to see it in person or just a picture?
No, like, can Google Earth show it to me?
Yeah, sure. It should be able to.
Yeah.
All right. I'll have to check that out.
Search, plastic trash.
Plastic trash.
Yeah, it'll show 40K.
But it's on a boat. I'm supposed to get it mid-October to end. I'm guessing end of October. I'll have Blood Rage and all of the fifth player. I backed it as far as it can be backed.
Nice.
And I'm hearing fantastic things. Yeah. The more I hear, the more I see reviewed. People are loving it. And it's Eric Lang. He's a genius. So I'm really glad I backed it. Now I'm really excited to play it. And then probably paint the miniatures, because painted Vikings would be awesome.
Uh-huh.
And I'm painting again.
You are.
We don't really have an official hobby progress, but I've been painting a ton because GW is doing Armies on Parade at the end of October in my local GW store. I'm signed up to participate with like 34 other people.
Nice.
Where you bring in an HQ model and two troop units and a display board. So I'm working on my Age of Sigmar guys to bring in. I'm going to have some Nurgle and some Skaven, and models are getting paint on them.
That's awesome.
Even 40K's guys are...
40K guys are getting painted. I'm hobbying not an hour a day, but I'm having some nights after work. I'll sit down for 2 hours and paint a little bit just to make my models look nice.
That's awesome. There was a Kickstarter for Conan.
Well, here's the speaking of Kickstarters that are over. So that Conan Kickstarter was, I don't know, again, probably like a year ago or something like that. There's two of them, because there was one. So this is the one that was done by the guys in, I don't know where they were, France or England or something.
Yeah, some great artists. It actually looked really good.
Yeah, and it's really a skirmish miniatures game. You kind of have, it comes with a mat and they different scenarios, and it's kind of like
tile
an Overlord.
Descent.
Yeah, because you kind of have an overlord, like you have a control panel, and then you have different, you have an overlord who plays the bad guys, and then the heroes play things. So it's more, it feels like a little descent thing. So they send out, because they're getting close to fulfillment, but then they said, oh, if you missed the Kickstarter, you can jump in late and do this, and somehow I got snuck in. I'd avoided it.
I avoided it, but it looks awesome, so I'm glad to hear that you're going to have it, because it looks like a fun game.
So yeah, I don't know. So that was totally just an impulse, like, because I had avoided it. Like, am I really gonna need another thing that has 100 miniatures?
Oh, Kickstarter, you son of a bitch.
And it wasn't even Kickstarter. It was just that they were just smart enough that, like, oh, by the way, we're almost getting ready. And if you miss the Kickstarter, here, we can send you an invite and you can get into the pledge manager. And
Josh, if you set up a Kickstarter for your kid's college education, mm-hmm. and you add in like just a mini game. You could probably get Troy to help fund.
Yeah, fund, yeah.
You know,
the mini game will be like six cards, and it'll be like rock, paper, scissors, basically.
If you get cool art.
I'll get Mandy to do some art.
Yeah, do some art. Yep. There we go. Oh, I'm in. I'm totally in. But speaking, then there's been at Gen Con, there was another like Conan game.
Monsters. Pre-painted miniatures. Yeah,
free paints and something, and I think they failed twice to fund that.
Oh man!
And I think it's just a lot of it's the price point. Like it doesn't. I don't know if it's because they're pre paint.
Set is like $200.
Yeah. Whoa! And you wonder,
they look great. They look really great, but
it's a lot of money for a game.
A lot of money, and I wonder if there's a saturation level. There's been so many other miniature games in the things, plus another Conan game one that I actually got into. And just the amount that you were getting for your money on those, I think people just, I think there was nothing that jumped out at this one besides the miniatures looked super cool and they were pre-paints, but I think the price point just people couldn't.
You weren't getting a lot of the minis, too. It was a low model.
I think if you were under 20 something. I don't want to say it because I don't remember exactly. But that was interesting because we saw it at Gen Con and we're like, ooh, that's interesting. But even then we were like, wow, that. I don't, you know, who's gonna. We none of us were even thinking about throwing any money at it.
Yeah.
And then we heard that it didn't fund, at least from what I had heard recently. So maybe they'll go back to the drawing board and figure out what they're doing. So.
So there's another The Others.
The Others. So speaking of Eric Lang, the guy is just, I don't know what he does. He just goes to sleep. He wakes up. He's like, oh look, here's a giant game. And then. But this launched, it's still active this, and it might actually still be active. Is it a couple of days left? We may or may not, as we release this, still be active or not. But my guess is you may have heard about this one. So this is Eric Lang, big miniatures game. The idea is you're in a kind of post-apocalyptic future supernatural team. So you're like, I think it's Faith is the name of the team. But you have like a vampire who's the lead of your team. So interesting that, you know, and you're fighting basically against the seven deadly sins. And they show up, they're monsters, and there's a city, the board, it's like a tile board. So kind of like a Zombicide. Cause is Guillotine in this one? Mike McVeigh, right?
Kulmany, Guillotine, and Studio McVeigh.
Okay, yeah, so all the big players that have done a lot of these Kulmany are not games.
Mm-hmm. It looks interesting. I haven't bought in yet. The minis look great. The tiles, it's a little. What's the word I'm looking for? You have to
kind of abstract.
Yeah, the abstract locations in the city. So like one tile will be a bank. But then you're supposed to assume it's a whole district of a city and the streets connecting it. So it's a little abstract in the movement. The minis look fantastic. At least the monsters. I'm a little resistant to buying it because I think gameplay might be very similar to Zombicide, Sedition Wars. That I don't know if I'm getting anything truly different and outstanding from it. So 68 hours, though, before it takes $200 from me. They're still under $1 million, which is kind of strange for the recent success Kulmany or not's been having. How crazy is that? Under $1 million is a little underwhelming.
Cool. So what is that? So 60, like 3 or 4 days, so it must end.
Yeah, it'll be over on Tuesday, I think. So
it's probably over when you hear this.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I haven't bought in on it. I saw it, and I'm like, oh, this... And then... So it was Eric Lang and everything else like that. But again, it was part of the, am I really going to play this? And then I'm so torn. Like, I feel like, you know, as much as it wants to take money out of my hand. So I sat and I watched like one of their example play videos. And again, that didn't, nothing grabbed me like Ty was getting at. It like nothing grabbed me on this gameplay that like, okay, yeah, it, okay, there's some tension between I'm the this group, these guys trying to save anything, but I don't know, it didn't.
Yeah,
it didn't. So I don't.
The minis though.
Yeah, the minis look cool.
Yeah, the minis look
sculpts are awesome, but I don't know if I want to spend $100-$150 for some minis that
I may not. Yeah, so I don't know. We'll see. Tough.
We'll see. They'll probably get money from me, but
and there'll be yet another Eric Lang game come out after this. So,
well, what are so not to shift gears here, but. What are some oldies but goodies? What are some games that haven't made it to the table lately that we really should think about playing?
It's funny that this topic comes up because, well, because we talked about putting it on the podcast. Yes, listener, this isn't a truly organic experience.
What?
It's funny
you bring that up.
I was reorganizing my game shelves, though, just moving some stuff to back storage off of the main, you know, the premier shelf. And I saw a couple games, Chaos in the Old World, which Eric Lang designed. I don't know if that was one of his first games, but Warhammer World, you're one of the Chaos Powers vying for control. Awesome game. And I took it out. I'm like, did I ever even play this? And the shrink was off of it. But some of the components weren't punched out yet, so I started, you know, unboxing it again. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I need to get that on the table. Twilight Imperium. Tommy and I really want to get onto the table. I've had that game for several years now, and it seems to only get played once every other year because it's such a...
The three of us played once a while ago, or maybe twice, I don't know.
And Arkham Horror, another one that... I've had for a few years now and played a few times. Every time I play it, it's great fun, but it just doesn't see the table often. So those are kind of the top three older games that I saw, and I'm like, that's right, I have these games. Need to get them out.
So does Forbidden Stars scratch the Twilight Imperium itch?
It scratches it, but it doesn't get me to the level. Twilight Imperium is so deep.
Detail, yeah.
And there's so many layers to it. It's a take a whole day type of game, which I would like to. So Forbidden Stars is kind of like the methadone to that to the heroine of Twilight Imperium. So it helps me get, you know, over the withdrawal symptoms.
Nice. How about you, Troy? What are some oldies but goodies? Some things that you want to bring to the table that haven't been there in a while. Knock the dust off.
Knock the dust off stuff. So I went. Yeah, I was just looking at my list of super old stuff that we don't, and some not so old that we don't get to the table very often. One was what was I thinking of? Super old, and again, a lot of these. Some of these are two player games, and they don't. And that's we just usually don't. A lot of times, if you're in a two-player game, we're usually playing on a miniature game. We're usually playing 40K, Age of Sigmar, right? Anything like, and that's because we all lean towards okay, if we're gonna come a good chunk of time, whatever, we'll do that. But like Memoir 44, I think
solid, such right? a great game.
Yeah, and but we haven't pulled that out in years and years. I think last time Ty and I played it might have been 4 years ago or something like that.
Yeah. You introduced me to it, and 2 years ago I bought my brother and my dad board games for Christmas. That was like the theme of my Christmas gifts, and I bought my dad Memoir 44 because he likes the Risk and the war game and World War II, and I play that once or twice a year now whenever I'm down by him.
Nice.
But that's a great one. I will play Memoir 44 with you anytime. If we don't have time for a 40K game.
Right. Because it does. Because I think, you can play a scenario in 45 minutes or something like that, you know, to get through. It's pretty good. And a million expansions. People who really want to play it, you can really play it, get the game all the way out. Mm-hmm. I think I'll save that one for super old. This one I'm kind of torn. Again, I own it and I keep. It stays on my shelf because I don't want to sell it, is the old Gears of War board game. It has some really cool miniatures. It was kind of the first time way back when did this come out? Like 2011. Fantasy Flight got into some of these, start doing these big kind of bigger box games and really cool miniatures. And it's just a really hard game. Like when we got it, we played it a couple multiple times. But that game, the AI in that kicks your ass more often than not, and you really got to get your head around, okay, how are we going to do this? And you can still get bit by just randomness, yeah. But
it's kind of fun. It takes a lot of stress. For most tile-based games, there's not that depth of each move point or each action point counting. You can afford to have a little chafe on your actions. Gears of War is nasty. You waste a point of movement, you pay for it. You waste an activation, you're done.
Yeah. And I just remember it gives a very, like, you're immersed. Like, I feel like, and it's only, you know, it's a board game with some miniatures, but I'm like, okay, that guy, he's crouched behind that. He's up on that. He's up above. He's crouched. He's shooting through a thing, and he's partially you know, it's just, it really gave, like, immersion and some really good combat, you know, almost simulation of that. And then the monsters are coming through. So, again, we probably pulled that out in a couple of years, but I can't get rid of it. Like, it's on my shelf, and I'm like, I'm keeping that because eventually we'll drop it out one of these days.
Yeah. Go ahead.
The other one that is just the old Space Hulk card game that every once Death Angel. Yeah. I kind of throw that in. It's funny. Like, I always bring that along a lot of times if we're at cons and stuff because it's pretty small to bring, but again, I haven't played that in a few years.
Well, you need somebody that's not colorblind so that you guys can play it.
The new edition anymore. Of the game, they added a very clear symbol.
Okay.
But the old one was terrible for that, yes.
Yeah. That's for us. Yeah, I remember the first time I played it was with Troy and John and Ty.
The saturation on the blue and purple is identical. And the green and yellow might as well be called Grello because it's like the same thing.
They're very muted colors. They totally are. But yeah, there's teams of two. And they had all of the different teams mixed up. And I at first I was like, oh, okay, so they're kind of mixed teams. That's kind of an interesting way to do it. And I brought it up at the beginning of the game. I'm really glad I did, because they were like, oh, no, you have the two red cards. And I'm like, no, I definitely don't. You definitely don't have the two blue cards. And, yeah. So, yeah, we had to reorganize them. But anyway. One of mine, and I don't own it, I think you guys both own it, Descent. I haven't played Descent in a while, and it's one of those ones, I think different games kind of scratch that itch, you know, to some extent. But yeah, no, I don't know, there's something about Descent that I really like. I think it's a fun game, so.
So that one, does Star Wars Imperial Assault scratch the itch?
A little bit, yeah.
But it's not fantasy.
Right.
Theme.
Yeah.
So I mean, Imperial Assault felt just like Descent from a mechanic standpoint. Mm-hmm. But the theme is so Star Wars and so different that the look and feel is just not there. What I'm interested to try is I have that Flying Frog game that still hasn't made it to the table, not from this year's Gen Con, from last year's Gen Con. City of the Ancients. Shadows of Brimstone, which is Descent tile placement. You're a character with cards as items and an overlord, like an enemy controlling the bad guys, which I think. And that's Weird West. Old West meets Cthulhu. So it's kind of a mix between.
It's a fun theme.
Sci-fi and fantasy, yeah.
Yeah, I've heard that. Again, I've heard that's good, but I've heard it's really. It really is only, I would say only good. It's good in the campaign setting. So, I mean, that's why I think we're struggling to get it because it's not, what I've heard is it doesn't shine in that one-time play.
Yeah.
You really need to commit and you're going to play the story and getting through it.
Well, Ty, you have 2 minutes to explain to us why we need to be playing Age of Sigmar. And go.
Age of Sigmar, 2 minutes. Wow. You don't have to put me under the gun or anything. So Warhammer pulled the plug on... Games Workshop pulled the plug on Warhammer, which they needed to do from a sales standpoint. The old guard is angry, very upset that 8th edition and the rank and file troops are gone, and they brought Age of Sigmar. It's not even, they didn't 40K fantasy. They truly made a new, exciting rule set and product that you can use your old fantasy models for, but they're putting out new models, which are the best models Games Workshop has ever made. So from a collector's standpoint, you want to be playing Age of Sigmar or buying Age of Sigmar because the models are fantastic. The level of detail, the posing, the different, just the different look of them. From a gaming standpoint, you want to be playing because the rules are incredibly easy to learn. My brother and I sat down. It's 4 pages of rules. That's it. 4 pages. You know, fantasy used to be a 400-page rule book. 40K is 250. You know, ridiculous. But there's tactics, there's strategy within. The rules allow for the front provide just a bare-bones framework for you to throw down in battle. There's no composition points. So if you wanted to bring 30 models and I've got 40, the rules kind of offset that to allow for different win conditions. And it's gotten me, it's renewed my interest into miniature gaming and hobbying. I wouldn't be painting my 40K models if I hadn't had Age of Sigmar to start painting these new models.
Very cool.
So get to Games Workshop or from one of your online retailers. Buy anything that looks cool, because you can truly mix and match the different armies too. If you think that the Skaven Ratmen look cool with Chaos, you can play them together. There's loosely aligned factions, and there's no army ally limitations beyond very, you know, these three are this, these three are this, mix and match between them.
Very cool.
Yeah, and I know I keep looking on eBay for guys dumping their old fantasy stuff just to see if they, because Tomb Kings are what get me excited.
Tomb Kings are awesome.
So I'm like looking for people to either GW will start adding them back into the new stuff and they'll get me, or I'll find somebody dumping some of their old stuff and pick up a few models and tip my toe in.
Nice.
The rate that they've been releasing new content overall, I mean, Games Workshop took the approach of, we are going to put out something new every week or two. And it started with 40K kind of beginning of summer, spring maybe. And it keeps going. So I think we're going to see a lot of those old races. They did the new race, Stormcast. Now they're redoing Khorne, some Nurgle product, Chaos Deity. Rumor has it we might see Death next, which you might see December if the rumors are true. You know, Vampires, Tomb King, some of those races come back.
Very cool. Yeah, everything you've said to me, like off air, about Age of Sigmar, that kind of gets me excited to play a minis game again.
It's super fun. Tom and I have played a few games. His Stormcast are incredibly powerful. He just picks
the right groups.
The counter. Well, it's not even that. He picks the rock to my army scissors, the scissors to my paper, or the paper. He always has picked the perfect counter to my armies. So frustrating.
The lizard to your Spock.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The ninja to my bear.
Well,
it's your bear.
It's gonna be your bull. So there's some upcoming things. So we are based out of Wisconsin. So there's some upcoming things for you Wisconsinites. The Magic Pro Tour Milwaukee will be here October 16th, 17th, and 18th.
Yep. This coming weekend, the week after. Yeah. So correct. 2 weeks from the day. Maybe a week from the podcast dropping.
That's why I was just going to put dates.
Oh,
yeah.
Right on.
Yeah.
Right on.
So October 16th, 17th, 18th, the Pro Tour will be in Milwaukee, which is kind of cool.
It's at the Wisconsin Center,
mm-hmm.
Right downtown. Should be a really good turnout. Battle for Zendikar just dropped, so I think it's a
good time.
Standard format.
Yeah. I like when new sets drop and there's a Pro Tour event right after, because things are kind of still in flux, you know. If you read any of that the those blogs or those, you know, event recaps and things like that. Gamehole Con is a nice little con out of Madison, November 6th. 6th, 7th, 8th, or something.
Yeah, like something like that.
Yeah,
it's four, yeah, 3 or 4 days. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, out of Alliant Energy Center. Yeah, that. So those are a couple upcoming things that you guys should go check out. And I guess with that, it's been real.
It's been fun.
It's been real fun.